I mean, what's that football fluke is doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I would be very careful with manslinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome back into the PFF NFL podcast. Sam Monson here, joined by young Michael Renner as we continue talking NFL draft. Mike, it is full draft season. What are we, less than a month away from the draft right now?
We are. Yesterday was the 1 month warning.
There we go.
And so honestly, like, the whole month of April sucks because it's over. You know, like, all the, like, there, we don't need to wait a month. You know, like, everything's done that we need to know already. Let's just get it over with. Not that I'm complaining. Obviously, it's good for me and my job to have, like, months and months of this being the focal point. But, like, I could get to the summer. You know, I could get to the off season here sooner.
I feel like you need the next month, though, just because the hot takes are only going to intensify. You know, we've already seen them. They're getting hotter. They're starting to reach a boil. And now we've got another 3-4 weeks for them to really hit overdrive.
I was going to say, I asked for that, but then, like, if the draft was, say, like, this weekend, the last month would have been absolute hell for me. You know, the last month would have been working around the clock every single day through the weekend. So maybe I shouldn't wish for that.
Yeah, yeah. So today we're going to run through essentially prospect superlatives for every position. You've got a pretty awesome article up on PFF.com where we run through them by position. There's a little sort of jump off point in this article to each position where there's more and more superlatives, all this kind of detail. So we're going to run through that and run through by position, see how we do for time, and maybe skip over some and move on to the most interesting stuff. But first, the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. They power this fantastic studio we're in right now. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Mike, before we dive into the superlatives, I want to hit you with two things that I want your take and or justification for. So the first one is, we talked about this before coming on. Mike Tannenbaum had a mock draft where he put Hendon Hooker number 5 overall and the 4th quarterback taken in this draft. Reaction, please.
I stopped reading after that. I was like, okay, that's usually reserved for Maurice Jones-Drew. You know, we anticipate and celebrate every year when Maurice Jones-Drew drops his mock draft 1.0, because usually it's takes like that. It's things that just are patently absurd. Even just like on tape, if he was fully healthy and like a draftable prospect this year and was maybe like 21 years old and a junior coming out, I still think that would be a little bit absurd, just given that Tennessee offense does not really prepare you to play quarterback in the NFL. So, yeah, but he's not healthy. He had a torn ACL, and he's not 21. He's 25 years old. So a lot of knocks against him. This one, I don't think. I would bet good money on it won't happen come drafting.
I'm kind of blown away by all the Hendon Hooker hype that's building right now. I mean, we did Daniel Jeremiah's mock on yesterday's show. He had him going middle of the first round somewhere. I forget what exact position. Even that is kind of crazy to me. Like, as you said, he isn't the sort of perfect, clean prospect just in terms of the basic stuff. Like, not healthy, 25 years old, probably has to sit year one because of those, the ACL, whatever. Like, we're not talking about this pristine prospect even before you get to the fact that he comes from this offense that is, it's like an abstract concept relative to the NFL. Like, you almost learn as much watching them just run drills at the combine as you do watching them execute that offense, which is not, it's just not NFL applicable.
Well, and it truly, you know, I don't want to say makes you a worse prospect, but you develop bad habits or like play the quarterback position differently in that offense because you're literally, you know, just counting numbers on the outside to make decisions about where to go with the football more often than not. Now, obviously, he does some things on tape, like that's selling it short to how good he played on tape last year. But he is not doing pretty much anything that he will be asked to do next season, which, that's just, that'd be worrisome to me, especially when you're, you know, pick five, that's worrisome. Pick 50, not as much, not right. as much of an investment. But anyone in the first round, I don't think he's going on the board in the first round. I would be floored if he does.
I mean, there's so much hype surrounding it now. I can kind of buy the idea that he sneaks into the bottom of the first round if the four quarterbacks that we think go high, you know, are long gone. Maybe a team just takes a gamble at the bottom end of the first. But, I mean, five overall strikes me as insane. Even the middle of the first round strikes me as fairly crazy. The other thing I want to get your take on, I've wanted to ask you this for a while, but I keep forgetting about it. You need to explain to me your fascination with Tanner McKee, the Stanford quarterback. Oh. You have him at number 32 on the PFF big board. Where is he in the consensus board? Because it's a lot lower than that. And I don't understand it, Michael. Help me.
Well, he's good at football. I think he makes really good decisions with football. If you look at his turnover-worthy play rate, I think it was the lowest in this class. And that's especially all the more impressive given that he had one of the worst offensive lines in the class. Like, his offensive line was, you know, on par with, like, Will Levis's, if not worse, in terms of just the amount of pressure he was under. And he still was taking care of the football and making good decisions. So I think that's a kind of a starting point when you're projecting quarterbacks to the next level is, do they not poop their pants when pressure comes and just throw the ball up for grabs to the other team, which, you know, a lot of kind of that second tier quarterbacks after some top guys in this group, that's a problem with them. And that's something that only gets exacerbated once you get to the league. So he's already experienced that and shown that he's not going to crumble under pressure. He's also only a third year player coming out and only 3 years of experience, even if he is 23, because he obviously took a 2 year Mormon mission. So he's still kind of just getting his feet underneath him as a prospect, and that you could probably expect more development from him. And then there's just played in one of the most dated offenses I've seen. You know, of all the prospects, it was, for my money, the worst college offense that I saw anyone have to operate in terms of options, in terms of where he could go with football. So at that point, he's just going to look better. Like, the game is going to be easier for him in some ways once he gets to the NFL. So that's why I'm higher on him than probably most. And he has, like, the tools. Like, he's 6'6". Legitimately a massive guy, has a NFL caliber arm, even if it's not high level or anything, it's more than adequate. So there's your Tanner McKee scouting report for you.
The consensus board that I just checked has him ranked 91st overall. You're quite a bit higher on him than anybody else I think I've seen. Okay, there we go. There's Michael's justification.
We'll see. That's fine. That's my justification.
All right, superlatives, Mike. Let's start off with the quarterback position since we've been talking there already. Strongest arm is where you started, and I think it's one of two guys, right? It's Will Levis or Anthony Richardson. Who do you end up going with?
Well, don't sleep on DTR. DTR, the fastest speed at the combine, okay. 62 miles per hour. So he's got a cannon too. But I like Will Levis Richardson versus Levis. Whose arm would I rather have debate? Just because he has a much tighter release. You know, he has that, you know, Aaron Rodgers-esque. I know Will Blackman on Twitter compared it to that, at least, who was, you know, one of Aaron Rodgers' former teammates with the Green Bay Packers, because it's so tight. Like, it's so quick that he just puts it right to his ear and it goes out, generates all that torque from his lower half. Whereas, you know, Richardson's got just a little more elongated. So in terms of pure juice, who has better? It's very close. I'm not, like, going to say, but I would rather have Levis's, just because when you're attacking, like, the intermediate, you know, 15 to 25 yards on the football field, when you have to make a drive throw at that level, he can hit a tighter window because he gets the ball out quicker, because he gives you less time to react to him going that way. So that's why I gave the nod to Levis. And it truly is, like, he's going to be, I don't think maybe tier one, like, I don't think he's Josh Allen arm talent, but he's in that next tier right behind guys like Herbert and Josh Allen.
There's a lot of people seem to love DTR as the sort of the sleeper prospect, the lower round guy. I asked that out on Twitter yesterday or the day before, and it was almost universal. Like, everybody's sleeper is DTR. All right, what about deep ball?
Tools. Best deep ball, it's CJ Stroud. I think this is why people are falling in love with him, or why, like, he produced the way he did at Ohio State. At the combine, he had the best deep ball, and he's got a unique arm in that I don't think he has what I would describe great arm. It kind of reminds me of like Baker Mayfield's arm. Like Baker Mayfield, kind of when he gets out in the move, his arm starts to sputter. It's not quite as good as when he can really rip it from the pocket. I think that's how CJ feels about CJ Stroud. When he's in the pocket, when he can get down the football field, when he has his eyes, you know, on go balls and that sort of thing, he can really spin it. You know, at the combine, he was throwing 65 plus yards on some of those throws. And with a really nice touch, with a really nice arc to it. But once he gets out, I don't think he really hits those drive throws nearly as much, doesn't have the same gas behind it. But when he is from the pocket, when he hits in rhythm, he is, for my money, the best deep ball thrower in this class.
Yeah, I think both those guys feel like they have, like, mechanically, when everything is set, they've got, like, a mechanically very sound process that the whole thing fits together, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then the ball fires out. But the second anything is off platform or they can't, like, that somewhere in that sequence gets interrupted, it loses a significant percentage of what it's going to be. Steve,
and Stroud at his pro day missed like 4 balls, all of them were on the move, you know, all of them were his rollouts, that sort of thing. That's just not really his game.
Steve had some interesting numbers the other day from kind of looking at how really impressive deep ball throwers had succeeded or performed at the NFL level. And obviously, like, Stroud is not just the best deep ball thrower in this class, but one of the best deep ball throwers we've seen come out. And in fact, I think maybe the highest in terms of accuracy rate on relatively deep throws. His was higher than Burrow, higher than Mac Jones, Justin Fields, all these other guys. And while all these, this group of quarterbacks that were exceptionally good, they saw a decline, obviously, when you get to the NFL, coverages are tighter, the throws are more difficult generally, but almost all of them performed well in that area, deep ball throwing, once they hit the next level. So the fact that Stroud has been really good at it does at least, you know, stand in his stead that that's probably going to be a strength going forward.
Yeah, I would be hard for me to see that not being the case.
So best pocket presence. This is, you know, one of those things that's held up as the most important thing for a quarterback, certainly one of the most. Who has the best pocket presence from this group?
To me, it's Bryce Young. I think it's by necessity, right? Like, he has to protect himself at that size as well as he can. And he's so good at kind of mid-pointing pockets. You know, sometimes pressure is coming from your right, but not necessarily from your left. And so you have space to this side. And he's so good at just kind of finding that midpoint between his two tackles and still finding that bit of space where, you know, if you were just standing at your drop spot 78 yards behind the center and the tackle's getting walked back and you aren't as good as Bryce Young is, some people might see that as pressure. But for Bryce Young, it doesn't even register as pressure because he's already kind of over into that space that was created. So he's so good at that. And then obviously with free runners, that sort of thing, like, he has that make you miss, that quick twitch with his feet, that nimbleness to evade, to elude, to still get out and create plays outside of that. So, yeah, I think Bryce Young's pocket presence is just feel for the position. It's just so damn good.
Yeah, I think because obviously he's dealing with the size that he's trying to combat and trying to convince teams and people doesn't matter, it's difficult sometimes to articulate like where all of his strengths actually lie. But just in this superlatives article, you have Bryce Young as the best pocket presence. You have Bryce Young as the best decision maker. You have him essentially tied with CJ Stroud for the most accurate in this class, and then the best outside of structure as well. So that's a lot of the components that you would be looking for a quarterback that he is the best at within this class. And, you know, obviously it shows up in the numbers in terms of turnover-worthy plays are exceptionally low, accuracy rate, all these kinds of things. Like, these are the data points that he needs to be good at if he's going to be really good at the next level at that size.
Yeah, he really is like the blueprint for how to get by as a small quarterback. And it's like, yeah, the guy who was, you know, a 5-star recruit, number one QB, Heisman winner, like, he's figured out all the ways to get around that size disadvantage already. And I think even more so than like a Kyler Murray did, where Kyler was kind of just an athlete who played quarterback almost just because that's where you fit in. When Harris, like, freakishly athletic as Kyler Murray is, whereas I think Bryce Young is much more of a like actual quarterback who just knows how to mitigate those size disadvantages.
Yeah, I mean, Kyler Murray was such a or is such a special athlete that he's able to still kind of get by a little bit on that, whereas mm-hmm. Bryce Young is a good athlete but not special to the point where like he needed to figure out how to be a quarterback rather than just skate by on athleticism. And then the last superlative in here, who is the best rushing threat at quarterback?
I mean, this one, do we have to debate it? It's Anthony Richardson. The guy is a I would not be surprised if he's, you know, even, I don't want to say better than Justin Fields. Justin Fields was obviously freaky, but like you're in a similar category of just that guy should go for 1,000 yards every single year or else your offensive coordinator is not doing his job correct. Like, he is unbelievably dynamic. And at 244 pounds is a load too. You know, he can run any concept you want him to. So yeah, Anthony Richardson, maybe, you know, he's in the running for Lamar for as good a running quarterback when you're projecting the NFL, as you'll see.
That's what I was going to ask, because we're in this world now where, you know, rushing quarterbacks is almost in vogue. And you've got Lamar Jackson obviously breaking all-time records of rushing in a season. You've got Justin Fields hot on his heels. You've sort of just finished what looks like the Cam Newton career. Jalen Hurts is a guy that's kind of gotten by with rushing until he figured out how to work as a passer. Josh Allen's rushing ability, albeit lower than those guys, I think bought him some wiggle room as a passer for a couple of years. Where do you expect Anthony Richardson to land on that spectrum, if not setting a new benchmark?
Yeah, I think obviously it depends on where he goes, but if, you know, I think Indy maybe looking like the favorite right now, you know, if he gets paired with Shane Steichen, he's shown that he is going to buy into that and run his quarterback, I don't want to say into the ground, but as much as needs be, you know, as much as he's going to push the limit of how much he can use that guy as a rushing threat, because it's so valuable. It is really changes the calculus for opposing defenses, changes the calculus for your running game and the numbers that you have. So it definitely is something that, again, if he goes there, you're going to expect him to go for probably 1,000 yards year one.
All right, we're going to skip ahead to wide receiver, because when I asked on Twitter what was the next position group people wanted to see, it was receiver by a mile. People didn't care about running back, so we're going to circle back to them later. Let's hope that the mic in the booth there handles the curveball. Best deep threat, Mike, that's your first wide receiver superlative. Who have you got there?
This one's tough. There's a few good ones in this draft class. I would highlight Nebraska's Trey Palmer, who had the best 40 at the combine, I believe, had the fastest speed at the Senior Bowl, 21.1 miles per hour. Like, he can fly. He has kind of bad hands, though. He's a good deep threat, but just maybe not a reliable one. I think Quentin Johnson's maybe your best, like, one-on-one deep threat, that if I want to run a go ball on the outside, he's the guy probably I would put my money on to win that go ball in this draft class. But then just who has the best explosiveness, who changes the game, who has that like fear speed that they can put in opposing defenses, is Jalen Hyatt to me, the Tennessee wide receiver. That's why he's getting drafted wherever he gets drafted. It's not because he's a complete route runner. It's not because he's super dynamic after the catch. It's because if you forget about him, if you're flat-footed as a safety and he got a free release coming on you, you're toast. He just has – I don't really care if you only ran a 4.4 at the combine. On the football field, he plays with elite speed. So, yeah, Jalen Hyatt's the one where you want speed in this draft class. You want a guy to really bring that element. He's your guy.
He ranked very high in the tracking data speed. So,
yes,
you know, forget the 4.4 flats thing. Like, that's a guy where a lot of times teams right now you're hearing are ignoring, if not dismissing entirely, the 40 times and relying on the tracking data. Jalen Hyatt's tracking data essentially says if he's not faster than 4.4, then the 4.4 like plays differently when he's out there. Like, he is a legitimate burner. Do you have any concerns that the offense that we talked about is not propping him up, but maybe making him look a little bit better at that stuff than he actually is, in terms of like stacked releases from the slot, never being bumped at the line, all that kind of stuff?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's why I'm saying, like, he's the threat. I don't know if he's the best deep receiver, but, like, the threat of the speed there. That's okay. Why I said, like, if I want to run a go ball on the outside, I'd probably pick Quentin Johnson. But if I have a guy, you know, motioning into the slot, I know he's going to get a free release, and I just want him to go deep, I'm going Jalen Hyatt there. So, yeah, I do have serious concerns about that, especially when you're 173 pounds. it's tough. You know, if you've never dealt with NFL caliber strength on the outside, it's different. And there's a lot of guys in that mold who are freakishly fast. If you go back and look at, you know, top 10 fastest receivers in combine history, not a lot of them are players. You know, it's difficult to be able to be a complete player when you're that fast. And I actually have a take about that, that guys who have like sprinting backgrounds are worse wide receivers because the gait that it takes to be like a high-end sprinter is not conducive to stopping. You are striding outwards. You know, you're really getting to really maximize your speed. You have to get as long a stride length as possible. And when you're doing that, you can't come to a stop nearly as fast as guys who have maybe a more lateral gait, you know, who are maybe a little choppier, who have a little different running style. And so that's why I think like the Davante Adams, Justin Jeffersons of the world who have kind of, you know, Justin Jefferson almost runs like a deer, Davante kind of shuffles, those weirder gaits lend themselves to being able to stop it.
All right. I like that. I like that you've also thought about this in this kind of semantic detail. Like anyone else would just go deep threat, like it's the same thing. You have analyzed the term threat rather than, you know, deep receiver. It's more nuanced than that. I like that, Mike. That's the kind of special level of detail you're bringing to the table here. What about the best route runner?
Best route runner, this is Jackson Smith and Jigba. Now, there's a few others in this draft class I like. Obviously, Jordan Addison's one of the better route runners in USC. I think Zay's a pretty good route runner, too. Michael Wilson from Stanford's a good route runner. But Jackson Smith and Jigba, I wrote today, it only took him, he was only at Ohio State for 3 years, but he got his PhD in route running in only 3 years. It was only 2 years, really, because it was a sophomore take they were basing this off. He just, like, he knows how to separate. He's got a lot of tricks in his bag and kind of just, like, understands how to play the position. So, yeah, that's why I'm high on him. That's why he's, you know, I think 12th in the PFF board, maybe 11th. I don't know. He's high on PFF board. And he's a great route runner. I just think that translates very well.
He was talking at the podium at the combine, and you know a lot of times these guys talk at the podium and it's 10 minutes of nothing or whatever. But he was saying stuff I think that was pretty interesting. He was talking about the receivers in the NFL that he like studies or watches tape of and all this kind of thing. And he was saying that he loves Stephon Diggs, and the reason that he loves Stephon Diggs is because every movement and head fake and all that kind of thing that Diggs makes is super exaggerated. Like it's over the top to get the DB to buy into something. So when you've got a guy like Smith and Jigba who has that absurd three cone change of direction ability, and on top of that, he's like magnifying the fake so that a guy is going to buy it every time. Like that's just supercharging your ability to separate on everything, you know, underneath and horizontal, and every break you make exaggerated. It's magnified the actual success that it has because you're doing the kind of stuff that you don't need to do at that speed.
Yeah, and I think the intriguing thing to me about JSN also is that we saw a sophomore tape. You know, there's the last guy that we really was in that mold who we didn't see as a junior but dominated as a sophomore was, you know, Ja'Marr Chase. You know, there's still physical development that occurs between year two and year three, when you're 19 years old, 20 years old. I know everyone's questioning his speed and it's like, oh, is the 4.52 or, you know, 4.5, whatever you want to, whatever he ran at his pro day, is that real? Well, like he may have actually gotten faster because that's what happens at that age. People improve physically. So we just didn't get to see it with him.
I also think it's why the idea that he could be a better player or more, do more at the NFL level than he did in college is not off the table. Like he's just being talked about as this slot only guy, but his route running is exceptional. You know, it's not just route running, but to play on the outside, you need releases as well, which we'll get to in a second, which is a little bit different, but kind of cut from the same cloth. Like if he can do all that kind of stuff, 4.5 is fine. Like it's not prohibitively bad for the outside. Like these are the kinds of things that would let him play on the outside and be more than just a slot receiver at the next level.
I agree with that take. I do think that a lot of slot only is why we're like, oh, why can't they play on the outside? Usually it's size, you know, usually it's the play strength aspect, which is not, you know, he may be a little tightly wound. He may not have the biggest wingspan for like a 6'1 wide receiver, but he's not small, you know, he's not, his play strength has never been a question. And that's something that when that's the case, like usually you should be able to play on the outside still. It's just that oh, they had the 10th and 11th pick at outside wide receiver who ran in the 4.3s. Of course you're going to put them as the outside guys in that offense.
What about the releases then? Because it's kind of an element to route running, but it's slightly different and does play into that ability to play outside and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure JSN's got some good releases. You don't get to see a ton in the slot. But the guy who I loved at the Senior Bowl with what he did, with what he does on tape at Stanford, is Michael Wilson. And I think at his size, so he's like 6'2", 216, you have more options when you're in that mold, when you have strength as an ability too. If you're going against like a 180-pound corner, you can just fire, you know, instead of who's pressing you, you don't have to go around him. You can just go right through him and bowl him over. You know, you can AJ Brown him to Christian Fulton when you're that big sometimes. So I think he's just got a lot in his bag. And then at that size, you know, see the 40, I think it was 4.59, not great. And you're like, oh, you know, can he play on the outside? Is that going to translate? Well, his 10 split was 1.5. You know, his 10 split was one of the better 10 splits. I think it was the fourth best 10 split in this wide receiver class. He's 216 pounds. Like, the guy gets off the line of scrimmage. That was similar to me, that was a lot like how Michael Thomas was coming out of Ohio State, in that, yeah, he ran a 4.592 or like right in the 4.6 range, but getting off the line of scrimmage, he was sudden. And then you saw that translate right away to the Saints until obviously Wheels fell off with injuries. But I feel similarly about Michael Wilson.
Yeah, I really liked Michael Wilson's tape when I was going through the wide receivers. I think he's a guy like in the mid rounds that may end up being a really good player if he stays healthy. Okay, so after the catch and freakiest athlete, effectively, you've got as the same guy. It's your guy, Quentin Johnston from TCU.
I am curious why people are starting to sour on Quentin Johnston. I think he is one of the highest-end athletes I've seen at the position since I started doing this. I mean, I just think a guy with a 6'10" wingspan, 208 pounds, to be able to move the way he does, and, you know, 45 broken tackles on 115 career catches, is, I think, still like almost like a 10% more higher broken tackle rate than even Deebo Samuel was coming out of South Carolina in his career. Like, the guy is difficult to bring down because he's so solidly built, like not an ounce of fat on this guy at 208 pounds. And then to be as explosive as he is, I just think there's a path to success. Now, I get there, you know, route running concerns, 10% drop rate, which I have a take on is drop rate that if you go back and watch them, a vast majority are Max Duggan fireballs that are not even spirals. Max Duggan was not even throwing spirals. I counted 4 on his tape that were 100% Max Duggan's fault this past year. That's like, I think he's getting a little undervalued in that regard, the hands questions, just because he was playing with a guy who, you go back and watch the combine, the guys that were Max Duggan was throwing to, he was last in the gauntlet line. Those guys were dropping a lot of those because I saw him try to hit the net at the Senior Bowl and the dude was missing. He took like 15 minutes to even hit the net. So, okay, I digress there. But Quentin Johnston, I do think, is just a unique dude that some way, shape, or form he's going to succeed in the NFL.
But you know why he's slipping. Like, there's.
Okay, yeah,
there's,
I know why, obvious. But I'm curious why, like, do you really value the ball skills that, or worry about the ball skills that much, or is the route running, or which aspect is really the one that is making people, like, he's in the 30s on some people's boards, and which that floors me.
I mean, I get it. Like, the first thing when I was looking, I start doing the draft stuff, you know, and I go to our big board and I just start working top to bottom, like start from the top, work my way down. And obviously Quentin Johnston was the number one wide receiver on your board. And after watching him for a few minutes, I'm like, I don't understand why, what am I looking for here? Because he's pretty bad at a lot of like fairly fundamental wide receiver things. And then the offset obviously is the stuff you're talking about, which is he is a pretty freaky athlete. And, you know, if you get the ball in his hands on a hitch and he turns upfield immediately, the dude can be gone, like turn a hitch into a touchdown in a heartbeat. But he's not, I mean, forget the catching part, like the drops, but he's not even good just at the catching bit. Like, the ball skills thing is not good. Like, deep down the field, he sort of shows willing for a lot of those catches, but it feels like almost like an act. Like, I'm not really going to catch this, but I need to go up and show willing, and otherwise I'm not getting the ball again. Like, he's just not good at that stuff.
Yeah, he's not your over-the-middle-of-the-field guy, I will say. Some alligator arms on tape.
Yeah. Okay, so the flip side of that is, who's the best at the catch point in this class?
That, to me, is Cedric Tillman, the Tennessee wide receiver.
The other Tennessee
wide another receiver. Big body, like massive, you know, 220-pounder, very physical, beats guys up, I think 19 of 32 in contested situations the last 2 years. That's like his game. You know, he is kind of, you know, your big possession wide receiver, like what the traits that it takes to be a possession wide receiver. Like, that's Cedric Tillman. He has all those traits. So if that's what you want in your offense, if that's the type, you know, big slot that a lot of teams are falling in love with, that's Cedric Tillman.
And best hands.
Best hands. There's not a lot of great hands in this draft. Cedric Tillman's got really good hands, I will say. More better hands in the tight end class. But Charlie Jones, the Purdue wide receiver, is the one who had the lowest drop rate in this draft class. 6 drops on 155 catchable for his career.
All right, let's circle back to running backs then. So a couple of things I want to talk about. Number one, who's got the best home run speed, the best pure big play ability?
There's a few guys who I think have unique juice in this draft class with, like, if you draft them, they are guys who can just run away from even NFL players. It's one is Sean Tucker from Syracuse. One is Keaton Mitchell from ECU. And the last one's Devon Achane from Texas A&M. I think Jahmyr Gibbs is up there too. Right. Okay, 4. There you go. Achane, though, is the one who has the best home run speed, in my opinion. 4.32, former track star. He gets in the open field. See you later.
Did I give you my Gibbs player comp?
Who was it? Jarius, I don't know if you did.
Jarius Norwood.
Oh yeah, you did. You did give me that. Okay.
I saw that. I looked at a couple of Norwood's highlight videos. I like it more now. I think it's good. I think it's the right one. Like, yeah. Norwood had some serious juice back then. Most untouchable is a subcategory you've got here. What does that mean?
I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, Sam. Do you need to explain what untouchable is?
Now that you're in deep with the semantics, so I want to hear the
okay,
the actual
fair.
Breakdown.
That's actually fair point. It means the most difficult to touch, and to me, that's Deuce Vaughn for a number of reasons. One is he's the smallest. You know, okay. It's hard. Objectively, has the least amount of surface area to touch.
There you go.
At 5'5", 179 pounds. So that makes it difficult. And then the fact that that dude can. I mean, the cuts he makes, it is Darren Sproles-esque in that you just can't do that if you are, you know, even 5'9", 5'10". It's just you have to be 5'5", to have that low a center of gravity to pull off some of the moves that he does. So I believe in Deuce Vaughn. I think that he is a guy – size matters at the running back position, but running style also matters. And he, more so than any small back that – I can remember coming out, will stick his nose in there. Like, he will run like he's a power back. He will just put a foot in the ground, put his helmet right between your chest, or more accurately, right between your stomach, because he's so much shorter than you as a linebacker. Right. So, yeah, Deuce Vaughn, I'm a big fan, and he's definitely the most untouchable in this draft class.
Like, does it matter at that size whether he sticks his nose in or not? Because he's not carrying enough weight for it to make any difference when he hits anybody.
Low man wins, Sam. Come on.
Not
with
the low man.
About?
Like, at some point, inertia is relevant. Like, when you're carrying 17 pounds, it doesn't matter how hard you run into a guy's knee. It's not going to move him.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that's obviously not going to be his game, right? He's not going to do that at the next level a lot. But it's important in that I think it matters just for how you play the position. It's the difference between it will make a difference between a number of broken tackles, is all I'm saying.
Like, because, I mean, he's basically got the Bryce Young thing of, we're not just talking small, we're talking basically unprecedented small. Like, Boston Scott is 5'6", and Boston Scott is over 200 pounds. Boston Scott is carrying, you know, an extra like 25, 35 pound plate over this dude in terms of weight.
It is wild. Okay. So, how the single best small running back was, you know, Kansas State. And then obviously Kansas State this year, a small running back in Deuce Vaughn. And Darren Sproles is the one I was obviously talking about before. And then the single best small DT, Aaron Donald. And then there's like a clone in this year's class from Pittsburgh and Aaron Donald and Elijah Cansey. How like wild is that? That like the two kind of unicorns at their respective position for being small outliers, now have a small outlier in this draft class who's like damn good. They're both damn good too.
Yeah, that is pretty weird. All right, best receiver from the running back group.
This one's Jahmyr Gibbs. This is why he is RB2 on the PFF board and why, you know, if you're drafting him top 50, I'm not even going to bat an eye. I think he's special in that regard. Just compare him to, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, right? And their receiving ability in Clyde Edwards-Helaire is like getting raved about and gets first round pick, but he's running like a 4.59 and Gibbs is like similar size, goes 4.35. It's just a complete level, different level of juice that he has. Legitimately could play wide receiver if you wanted to at the NFL level. So yeah, Gibbs, a special receiving prospect.
All right, let's move on to the tight end group because this is supposedly a generational tight end class this year. Best vertical threat, which is something you don't necessarily think of tight ends as being, but have become more and more in the NFL.
It's valuable if you have one that can, right? And especially, you know, with the rise of play action. A lot of the routes that you're going to run as a tight end off of play action are just how fast can you get there? Routes. And Musgrave gets there fast. He, you know, only 4.61 at the combine, but just on tape, watching him, he moves faster than these other tight ends in this draft class. So Luke Musgrave is the guy. There's a handful in this class, though, that are fast. Will Mallory from Miami has real speed. Sam Laporta from Iowa has some real speed. Zach Kuntz from Old Dominion. Like, there are numerous tight ends who have that high-end speed that you don't really see every single year, guys going sub 4.6. But to me, the one of any of those, the one I trust the most to still produce in that regard at the NFL level would be Musgrave.
Best inline blocker. This is interesting because it's not the guy that I think most people would expect it to be.
Michael Mayer right now is the best inline blocker, the Notre Dame tight end. And truthfully, like, there's nothing to me that says he's like capped ceiling wise. He's strong as an ox. He's only a junior coming out. Form's good already. Very patient as a blocker. I think he can stand to use hands a little bit better. He'll lose some blocks at times. Obviously, everyone's going to say Darnell Washington for this because he's 6'7", 270. But you flip on the tape and watch him go one-on-one against defensive ends, and he does not sustain blocks. He is not quite a polished run blocker by any means. Though he's awesome out in the move because he is a heck of an athlete. Like, all he has to do is lay a paw on like a DB and they're flying because he's so damn big, because he is, you know, basically a sixth offensive lineman. But just right now, he is not as nearly as refined of a run blocker at the moment as Michael Mayer is. So again, they both profile to high end run blockers though at the next level.
Yeah, if you've seen the combine footage of Darnell Washington moving the sled, you see a bunch of them, but him in particular, like, he drives that thing back pretty impressively, but the sled doesn't try and shed the block. You know, like, that's his problem.
Exactly. He's like, he's way out. He's fucking like at a 45 degree angle.
Right.
A DN would have just sidestepped that.
Right.
He's got an odd kind of approach right now that obviously, like, the tools are there to improve it, and he's still good, but I do think right now he still has a lot of room for improvement.
Best route runner from the tight end group.
This one to me is Dalton Kincaid. There's a lot of good ones. I mean, Michael Mayer's a very good one. Those two, they have the unique kind of separation ability that you can target those guys when you see man coverage. There's not a lot of tight ends you say that about at the NFL level, and the ones that you do get paid. So Dalton Kincaid, though, I think is just a little different level of athlete than Michael Mayer is, but both are very good high-end route runners.
Yeah, and Kincaid is the guy that's sort of jumping off the sheet when it comes to this entire class to me, but also with your superlatives, you've given him best route runner, you've also given him best hands, and I think he should be in the running for best of the catch point as well, though you've given that to Davis Allen from Clemson.
Yeah, best of the catch point. Best after the catch too. Like, if he didn't win those, which I didn't give him to him because I didn't want to give him all of them, but if he didn't win those, he's second or he's third. Like, he is there. He is elite at all those things. That's why you're getting talked about as, you know, a top 20 pick here.
Yeah, I mean, I went into his tape expecting to think that Mayer was the better prospect across the board, and Kincaid just impressed me so much more from watching the two of those guys.
Yeah, he's uniquely fluid for his size. It's easy how he moves. It's it looks like the, you know, everyone, people are calling him Baby Kelce. And it's just like, there's, that's how it looks, yeah, right? It's obviously, it really, there is no Kelce. Kelsey's one of one, but yeah, that's like, not a lot of guys 240 plus pounds are just fluid athletes. It's hard to be at that size.
Yeah, I mean, there's,
if you are, you play like, you know, basketball, you know, you right, play power forward in the NBA.
There's very few people where you sort of say, you can't even compare that guy to Kelce because it's silly, right? There's no resemblance whatsoever. Kincaid, you can at least see why people would bring it up. Like, there's a lot of similarities between the way he plays and the way Kelce plays. Very unlikely to be Kelce, right? Kelsey's probably going to go down as the greatest tight end to ever play the game. So the chances of him following that up almost immediately are minimal. But it's not a crazy comp. Like, it's like when Micah Parsons was getting Lawrence Taylor comps as a rookie, and you're like, all right, is he going to be LT? Probably not, but it's not nuts. Like, the comp makes sense from what we're watching right now.
Yeah, you're watching, because you're watching unprecedented stuff, right? Yeah. And I think that's some of that's how I feel about Kincaid, is that that's just, there's, like I said, the basketball analogy. It's why basketball players can move so swiftly. You see it all the time to tight end. Is because that's what wins there. That's like that fluidity, that uncoachable fluidity is what wins at tight end.
All right, let's skip ahead to the offensive line. We've done a few of these already in terms of bringing them up, so I want to go ahead to some schematic stuff. You've got best zone blocker.
The best zone blocker in this draft class among, you know, obviously all five positions, to me, is John Michael Schmitz, the Minnesota center. That was what Minnesota did. You know, they were an outside zone heavy team. And his just balance and ability to just, you know, coordination on the move is not something everyone has. The ability to run and then also use your upper body in a, you know, meaningful manner. Some guys struggle with it. John Michael Schmitz is not one of those guys. He's awesome at it. In fact, like he uses his hands so well. And so on zone runs past 2 years, far and away the highest grade offensive lineman in college football.
Should he be getting more first round hype buzz?
I don't think so, just because you don't need centers that high. Mm-hmm. Two, it's just like, he's not an elite at, like, he is an average to maybe below average sort of, like, physically, that he has a high floor, but I just think he may have a low ceiling too at the center position.
Okay. There's quite a lot of, maybe that's over it. Like, there's, grading is exceptional. There's some data that's kind of putting him in the Tyler Linderbaum bracket from a year ago, who obviously went in the mid-20s, 25, 26, something like that, and was good right away. Now, really good as a run blocker, a little bit less so as a pass blocker, but that's probably the area that will come on as he gets experience. You know, and yet, John Michael Schmitz is barely able to separate himself on the consensus board from like two other centers in the class.
Yeah, I mean, with the last two centers, I'm trying to think of the last two first-round centers you had. Obviously, last year, Linderbaum is like an elite of elite athletes, right? He's an all-time, like, he's freaky, freaky athlete. And I think the last one was Frank Ragnow. It's the last center drafted in the first round.
Creed Humphrey.
Or I guess it wasn't, because Billy Price was the center that year, too. So Billy Price made the last center, too. But, like, you just look at Ragnow and Linderbaum, probably the last two centers we had, as we at PFF had his first round grades. Ragnow went 4.99 in the 40 at 312 pounds. Like, he went a full tenth of a second faster in his 10 yards. But like, he was an explosive and strong dude who was a heck of an athlete that I think you're dealing with a different caliber. Whereas John Michael Schmitz, you know, nowhere near that level of explosiveness of play strength to where that you'd go to bat for him that high.
Okay, what about gap scheme? More of that sort of man-blocking power type of systems.
This is kind of, this class has a number of these dudes, that maulers, guys that can really move the line. But the one I'm most intrigued by is Paris Johnson, because he's not only, you know, massive dude, 6'6", over 36-inch arms, strong, but like, he's explosive too. I think he can really get off out of his stance onto guys immediately. So I think he's great in this regard. He can really crush a double team. That's probably going to be his bread and butter at the next level. And why, you know, when all said and done, he may end up being the first tackle off the board.
Okay. Let's move to the defensive line. What we've got here that I find most interesting is who has the best pass rushing moves. We tend to think of these guys as athletes, as, you know, what do they have in terms of speed, in terms of bend, all that kind of stuff. Who actually has the most sort of broad skill set of pass rush moves?
On the interior, to me, it's not close. It is Kalash Kansi, the Pittsburgh defensive tackle. Like, this is why we're so high on him, is that one, he's elite athlete. Two, he knows how to rush the passer. He's got a lot of moves at his disposal. You see him do cross chops. Anytime you see a DT do the cross chop on the interior, you know, where you're jumping up in the air and swatting the hands away, that's
– he does that a lot.
That never happens. That doesn't happen at the collegiate level. That's, no one has that move mastered. Kalash Kansi does. So he's got a lot in his bag to rush the passer. On the edge, I would say B.J. Ojulari from LSU is the one who really stands out in terms of diversity of pass rushing moves. I'm not sure he has anyone go-to just yet that's, like, dominant. But, man, he throws a lot at guys. Obviously had, you know, a good person to learn from in his own house, in Azeez Ojulari, former second-round pick for the Giants a couple years ago, that he's got a lot at his disposal. Wouldn't surprise me if he could sneak into the first round because of that, because he's young, not even 21 years old, and he's already that refined in his pass rush package.
So things like get off and burst, you can basically see that from from the combine workout measurables. The thing I want to ask, though, is essentially run stuffing, two gapping, edge setting, all that kind of stuff. Who are the best run defenders in this draft class?
I think on the edge, it's there's two guys that I would go to in this regard. One's Lucas Van Ness from Iowa, but honestly, I think he may trend more towards the interior at the next level. I look at this guy's frame, yeah, and I'm like, he could get to like 295 easily. He's just so big, so broad-shouldered, very long arms, and kind of just like still lean. But you know, his get off, his leverage is special in how he can get underneath opposing offensive linemen. So I love his ability to stuff the run. And then Tyree Wilson, Texas Tech. It's like, dude, 6'6", 270 with almost 36-inch arms. That's a tailor-made body to stop the run at the next level. On the interior, Jalen Carter's damn good, right? Like, he's exceptional as a run defender, but I wouldn't call him like a two-gapper, a pure two-gapper, whereas I think Mazi Smith on the interior can do a little bit more of that. The Michigan DT, if you'll recall, he was number one on Bruce Feldman's freaks list because, like, strength. He has some unique upper body ability. I think it was like 32 reps he did or something, or 22 reps at 325. He did an insane amount. And you see it on tape, like his ability to just two gap, put two hands in an opposing lineman's chest and then manipulate, control them, look, you know, peek one way, go the other. He's very good at that.
All right, let's move to the linebacker group. I think the first thing you start with the linebackers in today's NFL is coverage skills. So who's got the best coverage skills?
It's Dian Henley from Washington State. That's why he is PFF's LB1 at the moment and will be going into the draft. Now, you know, maybe doesn't have the Tremaine Edmonds build that you want from a coverage player. He's only 6 foot, but he has really long arms for a 6 foot player, 33-inch arms. It still has a good wingspan for a guy at that size. So I'm not really worried that he's, you know, 6 foot, 225, 226 range. Former wide receiver, former quarterback in high school too. So like he knows what they're supposed to do, right? Like that's a unique background for a linebacker that you see in coverage, you see show up, that he knows if a guy's kind of trended one way, like he's giving you a head fake one way, he's probably going the other way. And you really saw that at the Senior Bowl in the one-on-ones against running backs. I think he had three pass breakups in those over the course of the week, which is not a drill that's made for linebackers to look good. Nightmare. More often than not, you're just getting cooked. So, yeah, Dian Henley, that's your coverage linebacker you want in this class.
What about the other side of things, the sort of more traditional, old-school run defense type of stuff? So broken down into a couple of categories you got here, the best at actually taking on blocks and the best instincts for the run game.
The best at taking on blocks to me is Jack Campbell from Iowa. Now, size is a thing that helps a lot with taking on blocks because he's 249. Because at the NFL level, you have to be able to take on blocks from a standstill, right? You can't always get downhill, get that head of steam, and be able to, you know, get into a line or offensive lineman's shoulder pads. sometimes they get to you first because you don't know where the ball is going, because there's a little misdirection. The game happens fast. And so at that point, you need to not be a fish out of water when an offensive lineman gets his hands on you. You need to be able to sit down and stop in your tracks and stop that offensive lineman climbing to the second level. So you need a little heft behind you. You need some size. Jack Campbell has that. He's got the experience doing it, you know, multiple years as a starter and the highest grade linebacker in this draft class last year. Like, that is his bread and butter, is stacking and shedding between tackles.
All right. And you had Ivan Pace Jr. from Cincinnati as the best instincts in the run game.
He made the most run stops in college football last year. The guy is 5'10", 231, but I think he's got, I think there's a path to him to success at the NFL level. Obviously, you're going to be limited when you only have a 6-foot wingspan at linebacker. That's, you know, when guys are, you know, your probably average starter in the NFL is about 6 inches longer than that, I'd say, at the linebacker position. You're just kind of, you're behind the eight ball when it comes to taking on blocks. But he's so short, and short area quickness is so elite that, and at his size, it's just hard for offensive linemen to square him up. And he knows that, and he knows how to avoid blocks, and he knows, you know, how to play downhill in the run game. So you see a ton of plays on his tape where he's sniffing out blocks, getting to the point before he can get blocked, to where I think he could be this year's Malcolm Rodriguez. That he's not going to go before day three, but I think he could win himself a starting job still.
Nice. And then let's throw in best blitzer as well, because I think there's definitely a pathway now to these guys having an impact in the pass game from a pass rushing standpoint, even if they're not necessarily well-rounded players.
Yeah, this is where I think Ivan Pace is a great blitzer too, don't get me wrong, Cincinnati linebacker, but Drew Sanders, Arkansas, this is why he's getting whatever hype he's getting. It is because when he comes downhill and takes on a block, it looks like high-end blitzers at the NFL look. And he was a former edge rusher at Alabama. That's where he started his career. First 2 years, transfers to Arkansas, switches off ball. And there's issues on tape about him as a true off-ball linebacker. Like, if you're not blitzing him a lot as an off-ball linebacker, like, look elsewhere in this draft class. If you just want a pure coverage player, like, work in progress, wholesale. But long arms, explosive dude, and has that pass rush pedigree to where I think he's going to be like a tier one blitzer at the position. 11 sacks last year as an off-ball linebacker. That's unique skill set. And unique skill sets go high in the draft, like it or not, because there's, when you're unique, that means you're one of one, and that means you won't find it any later if you don't draft him.
All right, DBs. The DBs is, I think, a fascinating list of things. So, best makeup speed. I think this is an important element of playing corner. You're going to get beat sometimes, and a lot of them you can fix while the ball is in the air or while you're trying to get back into position. So who has the best makeup speed?
There's a few guys in this class who I think are like really plus makeup speed. I think who are kind of the top guys in this class. I think Emmanuel Forbes' makeup speed is awesome. The Mississippi State corner, like his ability to cover ground when he's out of position, with his wingspan, incredible. I think Keely Ringo from Georgia, like, that's his big selling point, is that he can really make up ground in a hurry. But the one who just, you know, whether it's the 40 time, whether it's his tape, who just has a gear that is like different, is DJ Turner from Michigan. Now he's small, you know, under 180 pounds, 5'11", 4'2", 6'40", man. Yeah. You can't coach 4'2", 6'40s into cornerbacks, and it gives you a lot of leeway at the NFL level. So he has the best makeup speed in this class.
4'2", 6" is pretty freaking blazing. Best man cover corner. This is interesting because it's not a name I think that most people have when they're making this case.
It's from a traits perspective, it's not Devin Witherspoon from Illinois. You know, he's 6 foot, 180, doesn't have exceptionally long arms. He definitely is like within the realm of like length that can play press man at the NFL level, but it's not elite. Like, you know, Joey Porter Jr.'s got 34 inch arms. Devin Witherspoon's well below that. He only has 31 and a quarter inch arms. So it's a different caliber of size at the line of scrimmage, but just the way he plays press man, the way he's able to mirror and just anticipate at 4 years as a starter, like, we'll do that to you. Like, he has the experience to where he's seen it all and really put it all into his game this past year. You saw it on tape, just did not lose man coverage reps a lot. And he's not going against, you know, maybe SEC wide receivers, but he went up against some pretty good, you know, the better ones in the Big Ten and still held his own. So yeah, Devin Witherspoon, that's your best man corner, in my opinion.
Do you have a take for why it took Witherspoon as long as it did to kind of put it all together and be put together the season that he did last year?
I do think when you are so like came in much lighter, you know, and much lighter than even 181 that he came in at his pro day now at. Like that to me, it's almost reminiscent of Zay Flowers. Like Zay Flowers probably gained about 10 pounds of muscle over the last year and a half. And when you're 170, 10 pounds of muscle makes a big difference when you get up to 180. I think that's what we're seeing with Devin Witherspoon, is that he added some twitch, some real next gear to his game that wasn't there on tape before because he added some strength to his frame. So I think that to me is the biggest thing, is that he really, the time in the weight room kind of changed who he was as an athlete and brought him into that realm of, you know, capable of playing high-end man coverage.
All right, what about zone coverage? People tend to dismiss zone coverage as this like pejorative thing or this type of coverage that doesn't really count, but it's what most people are playing most of the time, and it's the type of coverage that generally allows you to make plays on the ball. So it's important.
Yeah. There are a few good zone corners in this class. I think Julius Brents from Kansas State is going to be exceptional in your, you know, kind of whether it's like press three or press four on the outside. I think that's, he's one of the best in that regard. But we're talking like off zone, who do I want with their eyes on the quarterback, what you traditionally think of as zone coverage. To me, that's Clark Phillips from Utah. That's like, that's his bread and butter, is that he sees the game so well. He can react to things so quickly that even if he is, you know, 5'9", 180, one of the smaller corners in this class, and he can still get by. So I do think that Clark Phillips, if you are even looking for like a slot in this class that'll play a little bit more zone, traditional zone coverage, he's one of the better ones. And obviously that's like what's taking over the NFL is those kind of guys.
Right. There's a few more categories there that you could see on the screen, or you can go to read Mike's article on PFF.com. But who has the best ball skills? Because that, I think, is becoming a big thing in the NFL between guys like, you know, Marcus Peters for years, and that Trayvon Diggs. Like, there are corners now where if you test them and you get it wrong, it's a pick.
And it speaks to how many times, like, you are playing the catch point in the NFL. You have to. It's why ball skills are so coveted, is because a lot of your production will still be kind of not clean, right? It'll still have a defender there, right, in the mix, hanging off you. And the guys that are corners that can actually locate the football, get to the football, as opposed to just locate the receiver and get to the receiver, those are the guys that, you know, those plays that turn, you know, 50-50 balls go the defense's way instead of the wide receiver's, so the offense's way. And so the guy I really like in those scenarios, the guy who really attacks the football the right way in this class and then has the tools to, is Emmanuel Forbes from Mississippi State. Obviously, he's the FBS leader in career pick sixes. It's six at this time in Mississippi State. He's been starting freshman year, sophomore year, junior year at Mississippi State. Just the way he attacks football. And then I think he has good hands, too, to actually secure those picks to where I would be floored if he's not a guy who's got his hands on a lot of footballs at the next level.
Yeah, I think the point you were making is a really interesting one, that so much of NFL production is, I mean, we've talked about this before from a different angle, that like the difference between College Open and the NFL Open is dramatically different. Instead of looking for guys that are actually open at the NFL level, you're looking for guys that simply have leverage and body position versus the DB. But if you have a DB that's able to offset that by tracking the ball as well or better than the wide receiver or making the play at the catch point, like, they can turn an absolute ton of what would be routine catches against other DBs into actual interceptions, turnovers, and massively valuable plays for the defense.
Yeah, because, you know, the difference between an elite corner in the NFL and, say, a below average corner is really like one play a game. You know, it truly can be one play a game. One, like, 20-plus yard catch a game was the difference between elite and terrible at the NFL level. And so the guys that can make that one play go the defense's way because of that are definitely valuable, even if they aren't, you know, consistently shut down man type of corners who are in your hip pocket every play.
All right, one last superlative to cover, I think, given today's NFL. Who is the best slot defensive back?
This is a class just chocked full of slots. I'm very – it's – pause. But there's a lot of there's so many of them in this draft class, whether it's Antonio Johnson from Texas A&M. Like I said, Clark Phillips is a great slot transition. Travis Hodges Tomlinson from TCU is a guy who could play the slot. Kytrell Clark from Louisville is a guy I would want playing the slot. Quan Martin from Illinois played slot this last year at a really high level and all kind of played a little differently in what they're best at. But the one, if I want a slot corner, I want a guy to plug in tomorrow, any scheme, any basically thing I want to ask him to do in the slot, I think he's going to be able to do. It's Brian Branch from Alabama. Exceptional tackler, very physical, despite being a little on the smaller side. Would hope over the course of his career, he puts on probably 10 or so pounds of muscle to get a little bigger, to play around the line of scrimmage. But the balance he plays with, the way he sees the game, high end type of dude, to where I could forgive it if his 40s, you know, in the 4-5 range. He's got the goods.
Do you think our college defenses starting to respond to, because there's definitely some offenses in college specifically that they basically put their best receiver in the slot because it gives them a ton of open releases. It magnifies how much you can go to that guy without having to try and force it into, you know, tight coverage versus a number one corner on the outside. Are defenses starting to adjust to that yet, where some of their better players are actually now going into the slot rather than, you know, your traditional sort of number one corner boundary type of responsibilities?
Yeah, I think a lot of teams are wanting to, that's like becoming a role that you want a guy in. You want a dude in. If you have, whether he's your best safety, whether he's your best corner who has a little size to him, like people are looking for guys in kind of the 6 foot to 6'2" to the 195 to 215 range. If you're a body type like that and you know how to play football, like that's slot, that's college slot, that's becoming the NFL slot. That's what you want at that position because it's involved in everything, right? It's involved in the run game, and then it gets involved in the pass game heavily with the rise of RPOs and things like that, to where you need a player there. And I definitely think you're seeing a lot more, you know, of the top DBs are playing there. And funnily enough, funny story, Tyreek Stevenson, the Miami corner, who made one of the dumber decisions that I've seen in this draft class outside of maybe Jalen Carter, in that after 2020, he's a starter, but he's starting in the slot at Georgia, doesn't want to play the slot, transfers to Miami, goes 12-12 the next 2 years while Georgia wins two national championships. But he was put there because he was the bigger corner. He was the guy who was able to be a little more of an athlete and play the run game as well. And that versatility hurt him because it made him play him in the slot, and so he transfers.
All right, Mike, that's our run through position by position. If you want to read explanations, see there's a bunch of tape in these articles as well, head over to pff.com. You can find Mike's entire breakdown, one big overarching article, and then little jump offs to each individual position article. Head over there, read Mike's work. It's pretty awesome stuff. Mike, you're going to be back on Friday, right? That's right.
Steve's
back tomorrow, and we're going to do some wide receiver rankings. So we're going to take your big board, we're going to tear it up, we're going to come up with our own rankings, and then be wrong as we head into the draft. Thanks for showing up, Mike. This has been fun. We'll see you again Friday.